Hello, everyone. Welcome to the March 18th episode of the Bacon Bets podcast, the bracket episode of the Bacon Bets podcast. Two episodes this week. This is how I'm going to do it this year. This is how I've done it the past couple of years. Is on this episode, I'm going to give you my bracket. I'm actually going to fill out the bracket live as I'm recording this episode. And then I'm also going to give you my picks for the first four games for March Madness this week. And then tomorrow night, I'm going to record an episode where I break down all my best bets for the first round of games, the round of 64, I should say, because if you don't know already, not only do I bet on every single NFL game in the NFL season, I also bet on every single game in March Madness. I actually should look up to see if I can find what my record was last year. I think I did finish down, but I think I was just down a little bit. But this episode, like I said, I'm going to go through my bracket. I'm going to give you my picks for the first four games. Before I get into that, I do need to talk about Colin Morikawa, because last week, I'm sure if you follow me on Twitter, you saw this. And if you didn't, just a little bit background. Last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, Colin Morikawa had a late lead in that tournament, kind of blew it the last couple of holes. Instead of answering the media's questions or talking to the media whatsoever after the round, he just stormed out of there. The next week at the Players' Championship, before the tournament started, he addressed the media about this, and he said in his full quote, "I don't owe anyone anything." Basically, yeah, I was mad. I was upset that I lost. Didn't go my way. Didn't want to speak to you guys, but I shouldn't have to, because I don't owe anyone anything, is a direct quote from Colin Morikawa. I then tweeted that clip with the caption, quote, "I don't owe anything," end quote. And then I followed up by saying, "Yes, you do. Professional sports and the money that comes with it relies on the relationship between athletes and media." That tweet then blew up more than any tweet I've ever sent before, I think. It'd probably be between that and my tweet about the Chiefs this year where Nick Wright talked about it on his show. 1.9 million views, 1,000 likes, 2.2K likes, and a lot of retweets, 1,000 replies. A lot of people mad at me for that tweet. Big Cat retweeted it, saying this is such a big respect the biz move. They then brought it up on Pardon My Take. And basically for 48 hours, I was painted by the internet as a self-righteous Big J journalist loser, which, fair enough. My full response here now, I would have reworded it if I knew that it was going to blow up, because most people responding to the tweet, I think, didn't get what I was trying to say. So I should have worded it a lot better. Colin Morikawa doesn't owe the media anything, but sports media as a whole, and actually professional sports as a whole, is an ecosystem. And there's three main pillars to what makes professional sports exist. Number one, and obviously the most important, is the athletes. You can't have professional sports without the athletes. The other two pillars are the media and the fans. The whole ecosystem of professional sports, which leads to athletes being able to make millions and millions of dollars, relies on all three. You can't have professional sports without the athletes, obviously, the most important. You can't have professional sports in the current system without the fans. And you can't have professional sports in the current system without the media. Now, I understand in the current political landscape that we're in, the media has been painted to be the bad guys. People are evil. I got a lot of parasite was a lot of word that was used quite a bit in a lot of my replies to the tweet, that media is parasites. I do want people to kind of separate sports media a little bit from political journalists. And also, you can't separate, though, reporters asking questions at the end of a round with media as a whole. And when I first sent out that tweet and I was getting a little bit of traction, I tried to reply to a lot of people. And basically, my stance was, yeah, media is kind of essential. You can't watch or follow a sport without media. Now, people think when they hear media, you just think of reporters and people asking stupid questions and needless questions. But broadcast is media. It being on TV, if you're watching it on TV, you're watching it through media. You wouldn't be able to watch it on TV if it wasn't for media. You wouldn't find out about the players if it wasn't for media writing about them, reporting on them, all those things. Now, I realize already right now I'm sounding self-righteous, my point is there is a certain unspoken and maybe sometimes spoken relationship between the media and athletes where it's like, I get that's stupid. I get the reporters ask boring questions after rounds. I get all of that, but like, hey man, we're writing about you, we're broadcasting about you, we're talking about you, we're marketing you in a certain sense. Give us a couple quotes at the end of the round. But even, I wouldn't have even had an issue. My issue is not even that he didn't answer questions. Rory didn't do it at the U.S. Open last year. If you're really upset, I get it. Take some time to cool off. My main issue, which I think a lot of people misunderstood in my tweet, was the quote, I don't owe anyone anything. As he wears brands that sponsor him, that give him money, a TaylorMade hat, a Zurich, you know, on a shirt, an Adidas, those sponsors would not be paying him millions of dollars if he was not broadcasted out to the general public, to fans. If he didn't do media appearances, if he wasn't shown on broadcasts, if he wasn't asked reporters by questions, he doesn't directly owe them. It's not like the media handed the money, but the media does pay big dollars to the PGA Tour so they can broadcast events, so they can ask players questions. It's an ecosystem, and if you say, I'll take all the good parts of it, but I don't owe anyone anything, I don't have to do post-round pressers, I don't have to answer the reporters' questions, I think that's just an ignorant point of view. Now, he could have skipped out on answering questions at the end of the API, come back the next week and been like, hey guys, my bad, I was really not in the mood to answer questions, that's on me. That's what Rory McIlroy did the week last year at the US Open, and it was fine. But for him to be like, yeah, I didn't want to answer questions, I don't have to, I don't owe anyone anything, I think that says something about what Colin Morikawa is as a person. No, he doesn't have to do those things, but it's part of the relationship in the ecosystem of professional sports. And then the next day, he obviously saw a lot of people didn't like that response. There was guys, former golfers, who didn't like that response. A lot of people saying Arnold Palmer would have dragged him out by the ear to answer questions after the event. Rocco Media was not happy with it. Brandel Chamblee, which it's tough for me to be on the same side as Brandel Chamblee. I recognize that. But a lot of people didn't like his answer about it, and then he doubled down the next day and got emotional, and his reasoning was, no, I actually don't owe anyone anything. I've signed things for kids after the round. Media could have asked me questions then. It's like, what? You want members of the media to pester you while you're signing things for kids? Like, no, there's a press conference that's meant for where the media is supposed to ask you a couple of stupid questions that don't mean anything, where you're probably going to give a canned answer, but still. Just do it, man. Just ask a couple questions. You get paid millions. And still, you lost the API. You made $2 million in that event. Oh, yeah. Poor Colin Morikawa just made $2 million, and now he has to answer a couple questions from the reporters. Damn. Oh, what a tough life. Dude, it's really not that hard. Or even, like I said, if you really don't want to answer questions, just the next week, just be like, hey, man, my bad, guys. I really wasn't in the mood to answer questions. And that's fine. But to come out and be like, arrogantly, I don't owe you guys anything, you kind of do. It's not, you don't owe anything. You don't actually have a contractual obligation, but it's all part of the game, dude. It's all part of the game. But, and I still stand by that take, even though I got absolutely roasted. Roast me is not ideal. Being painted from all of the internet as a self-righteous journalist dork, which is exactly what I've tried not to be. That's kind of my whole thing, is I don't want to be that, you know, dweeby self-righteous journalist. I've shit-talked actually how a lot of members in sports media think they're like God's gift to earth, and that was actually backed up when I went to the Super Bowl and most of the media members there acted like they're God's gift to earth. I don't want to be that guy. But I do think it's part of the game, dude. You make millions of dollars to play golf. You don't owe anyone anything, but it's part of the gig, dude. It's part of the gig. Just do it. Or if you don't want to, just don't tell them that you don't owe anyone anything. It's just not a good look. It's not a good look. The weirdest thing about the whole thing was how many replies, and I think this goes back to how, like, just the media has become the bad guy, and, you know, in a lot of cases for good reason, but a lot of the replies, like, a very large amount, immediately went to, like, political like it was a political thing. I got called a libtard, was a word that was tweeted at me quite often there over 48 hours. One guy, if I can read the tweet, is the one I quote tweeted, and this is a perfect example of it. His response to my tweet about Colin Morikawa was, "This guy definitely cried when he found out Trump beat Kamala in the election, hashtag clown." What does my tweet have to do with politics whatsoever? There's a lot of brain rot going on where if your immediate thought about anything that happens or anything you see on the internet is immediately political, is immediately about Trump or about Kamala or about Biden, you got a little bit of brain rot and you should get off the internet. I could be a right-wing conservative and have that opinion about Morikawa. But I guess because I'm like the media, then the media is the bad guy and the bad guys are the liberals, so I guess it's all the same to them. Truly, if you're listening to this and you saw my tweet about Colin Morikawa and your immediate reaction was think this guy must be a lib, touch grass. I beg of you, touch grass. Also, not to stay on the political train here, but I tweeted out yesterday, Trump obviously won his club championship once again. And I tweeted, Trump lying or cheating to win his club championship every single year might be worse than his threats to annex Canada. People were very upset. How are lib snowflakes? But like, if me saying that the politician you root for probably cheats at golf, which there's an unbelievable amount of sources that say he does, and you get butthurt over it, that's crazy. You're gonna get offended because I say he kind of cheats at golf? This guy's won the club championship like 12 years in a row. Even if he's a half decent golfer, which like he has a weird swing, but from the film, like the video I've seen, it's consistent enough at least. Like he's not a bad golfer. But even like great golfers don't win. Go to your local golf club and look at the list of like club champions each year. It's not the same name every single year. That's impossible. One guy wanted me to cite sources that he cheats. Like I could not cite enough sources. Nothing was happening. I even cited a source from Fox. And even then he was like, he denied it. Mike Tirico denied it. Trump's known, I mean, and you can be a Trump fan and admit that he cheats when he golfs. Have a little bit of nuance. You don't have to die on the hill of Trump no matter what he does. And sorry that I don't like a guy who's threatening to annex the country I'm from. Sorry. Cry about it. Oh God, this podcast just went political. All of this to say, I stand by my Colin Morikawa take. I should have worded it way better and not as self-righteous. It did come off very self-righteous. I didn't mean that, but it is just kind of like, man, just kind of fucking play the game. Answer a couple questions, or at the very least, don't tell people you don't owe them anything. Is that a crazy take to have? Is that a crazy take to have? JJ Spawn, by the way, after losing the Players' Championship to playoff Monday morning, had a great post-round presser. A lot of insight. Interesting stuff. He talked about his shot on 17 that went in the water that lost him the tournament. It was a genuine, fun answer. And we wouldn't have had that if he just stormed off. But once again, to me, it's not even about the post-round questions. It's about just like a lack of respect for like the media. Ah, see, that sounded self-righteous, me saying that. It's not about the lack of... But it kind of is. Yeah, it sounds self-righteous. It kind of is. I get the athletes are more important than the media. I get it. But just fucking answer the questions, dude. Come on. Media companies do pay a ton of money. Broadcast companies pay a ton of money for PGA Tour rights. And you're making a lot of money playing a game. Help us all, though. Rising tide lifts all boats. Is all I'm saying. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad take. Maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe fuck the media. Maybe we all just should just have a silent camera following golfers around on PGA Tour events. Maybe that's the move. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. All right. I had to talk about that, obviously, since that was a tweet that blew up. That blew up more than any other tweet I've ever tweeted, but that's my response. I stand by what I said, mostly. I don't stand by how I worded it. And it is a tough look how I'm being painted, but I deserve it. All right, let's get into it. I'm going to start breaking it with my bracket for March Madness. I hope I still have listeners. Maybe I lost all my listeners because I'm a self-righteous dork, maybe. I'm going to break down my bracket, and then I'm going to give my picks for the first four play-in games. Let's get into it. It is the first of two Bacon Bets podcast episodes this week. It is the bracket episode of the Bacon Bets podcast. Let's go.
No, Lisa. The only monster here is the gambling monster that has enslaved your mother. I call him Gamblor, and it's time to snatch your mother from his neon claws.
More bacon than the pan can handle. More bacon than the pan can handle. More bacon than the pan can handle. More bacon than the pan can handle.
Utility. All right, here we go. Let's fill out the bracket. It is utility time for me to minimize myself here. If you are listening to this, it might be a little bit better to watch this episode on YouTube, or at least this portion of the episode. It might be a little bit easier to have a visual of the bracket as I fill it out, but I will do my best to talk through it regardless. General thoughts on the bracket this season. I do think it is a very top-heavy bracket. I will not be picking anyone to go on a deep Cinderella run, mostly. And listen, nobody hates being chalky more than me, but most of these picks are going to be pretty chalk. I do think there truly is kind of a top tier of teams, and then everyone else. All right, we're going to start in the South region. First of all, we're obviously just going to take every single one seed. You're filling out a crazy bracket if you take a 16 seed to win. Another thing I will say, you should be filling out your bracket, just a little piece of advice, dependent on how big of a bracket pool you are in. If you're in a small bracket pool, let's say, 50 people or less, and the smaller this is, the more you should go by this strategy. You should take the betting favorite, go look at the odds, take the betting favorite in every single first round game, and in the second round, try to assume what you think the betting odds will be and just take the favorite all the way through. Other people will not do that. Other people will get cute. And at the end of the day, the odds are the odds. The odds are the probability. If you're in a smaller pool, you're going to have a pretty decent chance of winning, or at least performing well, if you just take what is the most probable thing to happen all the way through, which is basically all four number one seeds being in the final four. And then I haven't looked at is it Duke is the favorite right now to win the championship? Either Duke or Auburn, take them to win it all. Probably a Duke versus Auburn final. If you're in a bigger pool, then you do have to take some chances, some upsets, some deep Cinderella runs, because you need to do some things to separate yourself from the pack. You're going to have a low likelihood of winning if you do that. But if, or at least even being in the mix, it's kind of a high ceiling, low floor deal. If you do it that way, you're going to have a pretty good chance of just losing. But if things do go your way, there's nobody else that's going to have a similar bracket, and you're going to put yourself in a pretty good position. So small pool, go with favorites. Big pool, try to figure out a couple of Cinderella runs. The crazier it gets, the better chance you have of winning if it does actually go your way. How I'm going to fill out this bracket is basically just what I think. I'm not just going to fill out favorites. That'd be boring. I'm not going to take any crazy upsets either. I'm just going to kind of go based off what I think, somewhere in between the two. So starting on in the South region, Auburn obviously to beat the 16 seed. Then we got Louisville against Creighton. I am going to take this is a tough one. This 8-9. We're starting out with a tough one. Creighton, obviously an extremely good shooting team. They have some issues when it comes to extra scoring chances per game. They don't grab offensive boards. They don't force turnovers. I'm going to take Louisville. Another thing I will say is that I do hold the rights to change this, because I will. When I go through and handicap every single game specifically in the first round, I will probably make a couple of changes. But this is kind of my first take. Michigan, UC San Diego. This is a very popular 12-5 upset. I know UC San Diego. I watch a ton of UC San Diego because I'm a Big West guy. They unfortunately eliminated my UC Irvine Anteaters in the Big West Championship. But they are a popular underdog for good reason. Don't be afraid to take UC San Diego just because everyone else is taking UC San Diego. Don't forget, last year, the popular, I think it was 12-5, it might not have been 12-5, but it was a similar type of situation. Everyone loved James Madison against Wisconsin. I know a lot of people who are generally sharp people. Those people went the opposite way because they didn't, you know, they wanted to zig when everyone else zagged, and that was wrong. James Madison won. So sometimes the popular underdog still wins. I will take UC San Diego to beat Michigan. Michigan has a big issue. Their biggest issue is turnovers. UC San Diego forces a ton of turnovers. It's as simple as that. I'll take UC San Diego over Michigan. Texas A&M can't fucking shoot. So I will take Yale, an extremely well-coached team, and a team that has zero weaknesses. Now, they are Ivy League, so they can only go so far. But Texas A&M, I'm not going to take any team in this tournament to go far who can't shoot. You got to be able to shoot the basketball, I think, to have a deep tournament run. All right, next up, we got Ole Miss against either San Diego State or UNC. I'll take Ole Miss no matter who they play, especially if it's San Diego State. Iowa State against Lipscomb. I will take Iowa State, but more on them here in the second round. Lipscomb could be a little bit of an issue, but I do generally like Iowa State. Iowa State is missing their best player, whose name escapes me right now. That is going to be an issue for them further down the tournament. They did a very smart thing of not announcing that their best player was hurt until after Selection Sunday. Very smart by them, because if it was announced he was hurt before, it would have hurt their seeding. They got a number three seed, but now without their best player, or one of their best players, they probably don't actually deserve to be a three seed, but they did it the smart way. Marquette against New Mexico. Marquette. I've said this a million times before. I will say it again. Fade the fucking Mountain West. Ever since I've been a college basketball guy, every single year, and I fell for this probably the first 3 years that I bet college basketball, Mountain West is the sexy mid-major conference. Every single year, people are like, watch out for the Mountain West. The Mountain West is fun. Mountain West can go on a run here. And every single year, except for one, they almost all lose in the first round. If not the first round, they lose the second round. Everyone knew that. Everyone was on the fade the Mountain West train. And then San Diego State went on that run to the final, and now people have forgot. And what has happened since San Diego State went on that run to the final? Last year, I think one Mountain West team won one game, and that was it. Fade the Mountain West. They do not deserve to have as many teams in the tournament as they do. And how many do they have? New Mexico, San Diego State, obviously the winner. Who won that? They beat Boise State in the final. Colorado State. Did Utah State make it too, I think? Did Utah State make it? Am I crazy? I thought they did. Did they not? Utah State. Yes, Utah State made it. So that's what, four teams? The Mountain West does not deserve to have four teams in this conference. You want to know who got ripped off? West Virginia and Indiana? They should be in over two Mountain West teams. The Mountain West, how does the Mountain West have four bids? Crazy. I will be fading the Mountain West in every single game. So Marquette, number 7, to take down number 10, New Mexico, and then obviously going to take Michigan State over Bryant. We're just going to do region by region, so we're going to stick in the South. Auburn over Louisville. I know Auburn has stumbled in the tournament a little bit, but they played in the SEC. You lose a couple close games in the SEC at the end of the season, I'm not going to judge you. I think a lot of people are going to try to get cute and fade Auburn in that second round game. I know it's in Lexington. So if it is Louisville they face, Louisville will basically be a home team. But it doesn't matter, in my opinion. I'll take Auburn. UC San Diego against Yale. I will take UC San Diego there. UC San Diego is a popular underdog, a popular dark horse, but once again, for good reason. Ole Miss against Iowa State. This is where Iowa State's best player being hurt is going to hurt them. I will take Ole Miss. They can get past Lipscomb without the best player. I don't think they can get past Ole Miss. Ole Miss, a little bit of an underrated team, in my opinion. Marquette, Michigan State. I'm taking a big 7-2 upset here. I'm going to take Marquette over Michigan State. Michigan State can't shoot the ball, and I think that is going to hurt them in this tournament. Let me look it up right now. Effective field goal percentage. Let's take a look here at Michigan State. 151st. Not bad. But Marquette's a very good team, a very solid team, a team that does everything well. I will take Marquette to upset Michigan State. Although, now that I say that, Marquette's, like, even not that much better of a shooting team. Aren't they around 100? 114th. Ugh. You know what? I'm changing it. I got too cute. Michigan State to beat Marquette. Michigan State's going to lose to a very good shooting team, and that's not going to be Michigan State. Or that's not going to be, and it's not going to be Miss Ole Miss either. So we're going to, this went a little bit of a different way. I thought I was going to have Marquette in the Sweet 16. I do not. Michigan State's now in the Sweet 16. Auburn, obviously UC San Diego, very good team. Auburn's way too much for them. It's a chalky one. I told you it's going to be chalky. You got one Auburn against two Michigan State. I will take Auburn to go to the Final Four out of the South. It's chalky. I'm sorry. It is what it is. You know what's worse than being chalky but right is being not chalky and wrong. That is always very funny when you place a bet. It happens a lot in like the golf world. Like you bet on like Scottie Scheffler to win, and he wins. And then people are like, yeah, nice fucking chalky pick, moron. It's like, what, who you want me to pick the guy who's going to lose? Be more respectable to bet someone else and they lost? Not a good example for me because I never bet Scottie Scheffler. All right, we're going to the West region now. Florida, obviously, over Norfolk State. UConn against Oklahoma. I'm going to go with UConn. Leading the team in blocks per game, I found out last night, which is interesting. Oklahoma, yeah, they're fine. But UConn, at least, you know, you got experience. You got it, you know, they're very well coached. They're not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. I will take UConn there. Memphis and Colorado State. I do kind of want to take Colorado State. I mean, they're playing another mid-major team, and I know I was going to fade the Mountain West, and I am going to fade the Mountain West. Colorado State's a very good shooting team, though. I will give them that. But I'll take Memphis. I do think they're the overall better team. Maryland, -10.5, I'll tell you right now, might be my best bet of the round of 64. I'll take them to beat Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon's in over their head here. Missouri, Drake. I like Missouri a lot. Missouri's an extremely good shooting team, top 20 in EFG. They're deep, which is big for the tournament. They do everything well. I will take Missouri to beat Drake. I know Drake's going to be a popular upset pick, but I'll take Missouri. Texas Tech over UNC Wilmington. I mean, come on. This truly is. It's and everyone's saying it, so now maybe this is going to be the tournament of upsets, but I think this is the most top-heavy tournament I think I've seen in the past 10 years. And I say 10 years because that's about how long I've been at least half paying attention to college basketball. Arkansas against Kansas. Arkansas is just a worse version of Kansas, in my opinion. I will take Kansas there. They're a team who mostly attacks the interior. And then Kansas has Hunter Dickinson, who is the difference maker in that game. St. John's, Omaha, obviously we're going to take St. John's. Starting back at up at the top, Florida over UConn. Florida might be the perfect team for now. I'm going to take Florida over UConn. UConn, you know, back-to-back defending champs. You can't say too much bad about them, but in over their heads against a much more skilled Florida team. Maryland over Memphis. I love Maryland. More on Maryland in a second, but Memphis is always a little kind of overrated in the tournament. I will take Missouri to upset Texas Tech. People don't... I mean, I'm going to switch over and I'll show you YouTube viewers right here. Missouri, 18th in the country in college basketball in effective field goal percentage. That's big. Obviously played in the very good SEC this season. I don't think enough people are giving Missouri the credit. Kansas against St. John's. St. John's is too elite defensively. I know I've tried to fade St. John's a few times before because of their bad shooting. I don't think the time to do it is against Kansas. Kansas is like a good but not great team. You got to be, in my opinion, a great team to upset St. John's. And maybe I'm going to regret saying that in a minute. But I'll take St. John's over Kansas. So Sweet 16, we got Florida against Maryland. I'm going to go Maryland here. Maryland is going to be my team that is a little bit of a dark horse. I mean, they're 4 seed, so they're not a crazy dark horse, but I love Maryland. They're a good shooting team, a great defensive team. They create a ton of extra scoring chances, a great rebounding team. I'm blanking on the guy's name, but their guard who shoots over 40% from three, so they got a three-point shooter. They got is it Derek Queen? Is that the name of their center? They have an unbelievable center, great defensive piece. They can beat you on the perimeter. They can beat you down low. They can defend both. They can cause turnovers. They can grab offensive boards. I fucking love Maryland in this tournament. It really sucks to me because two T2 dark horses I wanted to back are Missouri and Maryland, and they're in the same region and they're the same region against in Florida. So Florida's the obvious pick. If I had to pick one team right now to win it all, it'd be Florida, but we're filling out a bracket. We're having some fun. I think Maryland does match up well against Florida, though, stylistically. I can't take all one seeds. I wish Maryland was in any other region. I will take Maryland to upset Florida in the Sweet 16. Missouri against St. John's. I'm going to go Missouri. This is my region of upsets is the West. I don't think the one or the two make it to the Elite Eight. St. John's. You want to talk about a team that can't shoot? Now, it doesn't matter. I've tried to fade them, but they are 244th in the country in effective field goal percentage. They are elite defensively. But you got a team that's 244th in the country in EFG going up against a team that is 18th in the country in EFG. Now, you want to look at the teams who St. John's has faced this season. The 17 teams who are better shooting than Missouri. One thing you'll notice if you look at those teams, let me double check to make sure I don't look like an idiot. Not a single one's in the Big East. So this is, by the numbers, if St. John's does play Missouri, the best shooting team they faced all season, that's going to be the kryptonite. Because if Missouri can find a way to score, St. John's doesn't have the offense to keep pace. UConn, Creighton, basically as good as Missouri. But Missouri is ranked higher in the FG. So I'll take Missouri. So this is the weird Elite Eight matchup. I got number 4 Maryland against number 6 Missouri. And I will take number 4 Maryland to win the West region. If you want to bet on Maryland to win the West region, they're around 10-1, depending on where you look. I like Maryland advancing to the Final Four. Now that we have the South, actually, I'll just keep the Final Four for the Final Four. Let's move on to the East region. Obviously, Duke, Mississippi State, Baylor. These are two teams, actually, I know a little bit about Mississippi State. I haven't watched or, like, looked at Baylor at all this season. I have no really true idea what Baylor is. I'm going to put in Mississippi State because I at least know who they are. Great defensive team, a great rebounding team. They have a little bit better offense. Actually, I think they're the highest Mississippi State team in a couple decades. So I'll take Mississippi State. This is one game that when I handicap the round of 64, so tomorrow night when I record, this might be a game I'll switch. If I like Baylor in that game, once I handicap it, I may switch this. But for now, let's put Mississippi State in, but it really doesn't matter because obviously Duke is going to beat them. Oregon Liberty, another game I got to handicap a little bit more. I do feel a little weird just taking 12s over 5s because I know that's kind of the popular upset pick, the 12 over 5. I do think Oregon from top to bottom is the better team, though. Arizona against Akron. Arizona over Akron. Although Akron can shoot, but Arizona, I think Arizona's being a little bit underrated because of their tournament performances the past few years. They did make it to the Big 12 final. They beat Texas Tech. They can beat very good teams. I don't think they'll have an issue with Akron. BYU against VCU, a fascinating game. I actually have my bet placed for this game already. I've handicapped it. I am going to take the 11 VCU to upset BYU. Very straightforward. These two teams are both three-point shooting teams. VCU defends the three-point shot way better than BYU. So I will take the VCU Rams. Wisconsin over Montana. Montana stinks. Montana is a terrible team. I will probably be betting Wisconsin to cover the spread in that game as well. I'll take St. Mary's over Vanderbilt. We're getting a little crazy putting Vanderbilt in here. Come on. Come on. How many SEC? There's too many SEC teams. Vanderbilt, come on. Alabama over Robert Morris. All right, I already took Duke over Mississippi State. I'm going to take Arizona over Oregon. I will take VCU against Wisconsin is an interesting round of 32. Is Wisconsin a three-point shooting team this year? Is it crazy for me to even suggest that? If they are a three-point shooting team, I'm going to take VCU. They are 18th in three-point shot rate. I thought they were. I'm going to take VCU. A little bit of a Cinderella. So maybe I do kind of have a Cinderella run in VCU. Then I'll take, obviously, Alabama over St. Mary's. St. Mary's will be in over their head. Sweet 16, I will take Duke over Arizona. Duke, there's a very, 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 very good argument to be made that Duke is the best team in the country. Arizona is too much for Arizona, and I will take Alabama over VCU. The end of the Cinderella run for VCU will be in the Sweet 16. Then we have Duke against Alabama, another 1-2. I get it. I know it's chalky. This is not fun. I hate it when I see people fill up brackets and they just take the top seeds every time. I know it sucks. I truly, truly, truly do believe in almost every region, the ones are a step above, the twos are like one step below, and then it's everyone else, except for the West. I will take Duke to beat Alabama. Alabama's defense has some questions, and I think Duke can take advantage of that. I will take Duke to win the East region. Finally, we're on to the Midwest here. Houston, obviously, over SIUE. Southern Illinois, Edwardsville. Gonzaga, I do think Gonzaga is being overrated, but I will take them to beat Georgia. I do like this 12-5, actually. I like McNeese to actually to beat Clemson quite a bit. More on that game on tomorrow night's episode. But McNeese dominated their conference. Is it the what's their conference again? The Southland Conference? No, I don't think that's right. Southern Conference, McNeese dominated their conference. More on that game tomorrow. I've already handicapped it, but McNeese is very good, and I think they can attack the interior of the Clemson defense. I'll take a 12-5 upset there, McNeese over Clemson. High Point's a popular, sexy pick. I'm out on High Point. I like Purdue in that game. I'll take Illinois against the winner of Texas and Xavier. Now, that's interesting. That's a tough matchup. I think Texas is a team that's very... Now, see, this is tough. I know this episode is me filling out the bracket plus my first four picks. I actually haven't even handicapped the first four games. I'm going to do this and then stop, record them, and then record my picks for the first four games. I'm most likely going to take Texas in that game. Texas is a team, when you look at their metrics, very good. I think they've been on the wrong side of a lot of variance this year. A lot of, maybe not luck, but variance. I kind of like Texas. So if Texas beats Xavier, I think they beat Illinois too. I'm going to have 11 seed Texas going to the round of 32. I like Troy. A few years ago, I picked Abilene Christian to beat Texas in the first round. If I were to pick this year's version of that upset, I think I'd go Troy over Kentucky. Yeah, fuck it, for the bracket. I'll go Troy over Kentucky for the bracket. Not advisable. Kentucky's a massive, massive, massive favorite. But more on that game on tomorrow's episode. UCLA against Utah State. We're going to fade the Mountain West there. Easy. Tennessee over Wofford. Perfect. We're going back up to the top here. People are going to give Gonzaga a chance against Houston. I'm not buying it. Give me Houston. I will take Purdue against McNeese. The McNeese Cinderella run ends there. I will take Texas over Troy. Easier matchup for Texas there. I will take Tennessee against UCLA. And then we're back up to the top here. Houston over Purdue. Tennessee over Texas and Xavier. You know what? Yeah, let's get crazy. I can't have three regions ending in a 1-2. I'll go Houston against Texas. It seems like at least half the years, there's an 11 seed that wins a play-in game that goes on a run. My pick to do that is going to be Texas. Now watch Xavier win and this whole thing gets screwed over. But I will take Texas to take on Houston in all Texas Elite Eight matchup, and I will take Houston to win. So my final four, if you're listening and you lost track. I have Auburn against Maryland. So number one, Auburn against number four, Maryland on one side of the final four. The other side of the final four, I have Duke against Houston. So three number one seeds and a number four seed. Very, very, very chalky. I get it, but it is what it is. I will now go Maryland to upset Auburn in the final four to make it to the championship game. I will also take Houston to defeat Duke. And then give me Houston to win it all. Houston finally gets over the hump. They win it all. My total points is going to be low scoring this game. 132 total points for the championship game. Houston against Maryland. Houston is basically just a perfect version of Maryland. So we're actually have two kind of similar styles. And that is the final. Houston to upset, not upset, to beat Maryland in the final. This is the reason why I like Houston. Now, I hope, I have a theory that I think is true. I hope I'm not proven incorrect, which there's certainly possible. Is this the best shooting Houston team that we've seen in recent years? Houston is 89th in effective field goal percentage of the season. Where do they rank last year? 196th. Okay, now let's keep going back a few more years. Am I being correct about this? I should have double-checked before I did this live. Okay, 81st. 2 years ago, they were basically the same shooting team. Okay, that's not great. That's not great. 2021, 2022. 47th, even better. Fuck. My theory was this is the best shooting team that Houston's had in a while. 2020, 2021. No, that's it. Okay, 154th. Okay. So at the very least, this is as good of a shooting team as they've had in recent years. And then you look at defensive efficiency first. Extra scoring chances per game, first. Defense wins championships a lot of the time. We saw it with Virginia before. Virginia did lose in first one seed to lose, but I do think that is what is going to carry them to the final, to the championship, is defense for Houston. I love them a lot this season. I've won a lot of money betting on Houston this season. They are my pick to win the 2024-2025 National Championship. There you go. It's a very chalky bracket. I get it. But I do really think the best teams this season are a step above the rest. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. I actually have to handicap the first four games, so I'll be back it'll be an instant. I'm going to time travel here for you, and I'll be back to handicap the first four. All right, let's start talk first four action, starting with St. Francis, PA against Alabama State. What a game. I hate handicapping the 16 versus 16 seed games, but that's what we got to do if we're going to bet on every single game. I'm going to take St. Francis, the Red Storm, Red Flash, the Red Flash against the Hornets. I'll take them +3.5, -102. There's +4.5s out there, I believe, and -115. I'll take the +3.5, -102. At FanDuel. Just the far better shooting team here. St. Francis, 132nd in the country in effective field goal percentage. Alabama State, 327th. One of the worst shooting teams in Division I college basketball. Now, this is, though, the age-old question of what team would you rather back? The better shooting team or the team that creates more extra scoring chances through forcing turnovers and offensive rebounds? That's what we have here, because St. Francis, even though they are the much better shooting team, 330th in extra scoring chances per game, -4.0. Alabama State thrives in this metric. This is why they are able to go on and win their conference tournament. 36th in extra scoring chances per game, +3.9. But at the end of the day, and anyone else who bets on college basketball knows this, I would rather just bet on the team that's going to be able to shoot. Nothing is worse than betting on a team that consistently misses shots. It's the most frustrating thing of all time. And not only am I going to take the better team that can shoot, it's the better team that's getting points. The better shooting team is getting points in this situation. I will take that 10 times out of 10. Also, both teams are three-point shooting teams, and St. Francis, PA, is the better defender of the perimeter, 92nd opponent three-point field goal percentage, whereas Alabama State's 157th. So I will take the points with the Red Flash with the first game of the NCAA tournament on Tuesday night. The late game is UNC against San Diego State. Obviously, I'm going to go ahead and fade the Mountain West. I talked about that earlier. This is a no-brainer, in my opinion, for this one. Much better shooting team UNC is. 52nd in effective field goal percentage, 54.2%. San Diego State's 185th, 50.6%. Now, what might be the most damning thing about San Diego State in this game and in this tournament is they cannot hit free throws. They're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country, 334th in free throw field goal percentage. I guess not a field goal, free throw shooting percentage. They only hit 66.7% of their free throws, only two-thirds of their free throws. It's going to be tough to beat a team from a much better conference, a more skilled team, when you can't even hit your free throws. Those free throws are important when you're playing against a much better team from a better conference, to keep the game close, to maybe even take a lead. And if you're only hitting your free throws at a clip of 66.7%, it's going to be tough. You have to make up for that in a lot of different areas, and I don't think the Aztecs can. I'll take UNC -4.5, -104. Moving on to Wednesday's games, I'm looking at the total in the other 16-versus-16 showdown. Mount St. Mary's against American. I will go under 125.5 at -110 odds. This is going to be a defensive battle. This is going to be the entire worst game of the tournament from start to finish to watch. It's going to suck. American plays a very slow pace of play, 359th in pace of play. That is the fourth slowest pace of play in Division I college basketball. So they're going to play slow, but also American ranks 58th in three-point shot rate. Mount St. Mary's is 51st in opponent three-point field goal percentage. Mount St. Mary's, while they do play faster pace of play, they are 359th in turnover rate, so a lot of their possessions don't end up in points being scored. So you have one team that plays at a slow pace, shoots the three, and they're facing a team that defends the three well, but also turns the ball over and wastes a lot of their own possessions. And all of this is wrapped up in one of my favorite stats when handicapping totals, which is floor percentage. Floor percentage measures the percentage of a team's possessions that result in at least 1 point being scored. These two teams are 260th and 302nd in floor percentage. So slow pace, don't take advantage of their possessions, don't score a single point on the majority of their possessions. This screams like an under bet to me. I'll go under 129.5 between Mount St. Mary's and American. Then we got the game of the first four, the most anticipated one. It is Texas against Xavier, and I will back Texas +2.5 against Xavier. A lot of metrics here, actually very, very similar. Actually, wouldn't be surprised no matter what the outcome is. Texas is a slightly better shooting team. Xavier does rank better in terms of defensive efficiency, but there are two big difference makers that are going to make me take the points with the Longhorns. Number one, Texas, obviously a much tougher schedule. Playing in the SEC is much more difficult than playing in the Big East. But the big one is, I do think the Longhorns have a stylistic advantage in this one. 93rd of Texas's shots come from two-point shot range. That is 64.6%. So they attack the interior of their opponent's defenses. Xavier comes into this game. That is their weakness on defense. They do a really good job of defending the perimeter, but they struggle defending the interior. 52.3% of points scored against Xavier comes from two-point range. That is 289th in the country. So I think Texas can beat them up down low, and I think that could be the difference maker in this game. Also, like I said, strength of schedule is going to go in Texas's favor as well. So I'll take Texas +2.5, -110 against Xavier in the final first four games. So we got, to recap, St. Francis +3.5, -102, UNC -4.5, -104, Mount St. Mary's, American, under 129.5, -110, and Texas +2.5, -110. Those are my picks for first four. Tomorrow night, Tuesday night, I will be recording my best bet for all 32 round of 64 games. I guess I will not be able to handicap the games involving, at the very least, two of the four first four games. So I'll have to tweet out those picks. But other than that, I will be breaking down my best bet for all the first round games. That'll be out Wednesday morning. In terms of the second round, I might have to live stream maybe Saturday morning my picks for Saturday's and Sunday's games. I'm not sure yet how I'm going to do that, but I will get you in one form or another all my best bets for the round of 32 once the round of 64 wraps up. Thank you so much for listening, watching. Subscribe to the Bacon Bets Podcast on YouTube. Best of luck. Gamble or bless, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.